And welcome back to the Sports Ticket, 9:37 our time, 46 degrees on this Wednesday, Halloween, October the 31st, 2018. And we certainly appreciate our next guest coming on with us because he is taking time out of his busy schedule. He already started trick-or-treating earlier this morning. He's been up all night long, excited about it. John Betts is with us to talk high school football playoffs. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. The crazy thing for me is we're doing this new basketball wrestling Kansas pregame winter sports preview, and so my mind has almost shifted out of football season. It's really a weird kind of odd scenario for me, and I'm swimming in basketball questionnaires and wrestling information, and that's not really my wheelhouse. I mean, I not to say that I'm entirely uneducated about those sports, but I'm learning a lot about them, and I'm really excited about that phase of things. But certainly there's nothing more exciting than the high school football playoffs for me.
Yeah, many times when we're in the media, and we see this, of course, with college sports too, is you got a overlapping coming up here very soon at the college level in regards to K-State, KU having basketball. We already have some exhibition games. KU had one. K-State men have one coming up on Friday. That overlap with football, and so it's hard for universities and their stations and everybody else, their sports networks, to cover all of those games because of the overlapping. It's some of the most difficult work of the season, so I totally understand what you're talking about. Let's go into the high school football playoffs, and let's start in Class 3A. Here are the matchups. It will be Frontenac at Galena. Galena's undefeated. Marysville will be at Topeka Hayden. Parsons is at Prairie View. It is Sabetha, the defending state champs, hosting Perry Lecompton. Heston is at Smoky Valley. Colby will be at Pratt. Pratt undefeated at 9-0. Smoky Valley also 9-0. Andale 9-0 will host Chapman. And the game that we'll have on Z96.3 Lake and live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel, the 6-3 Beloit Trojans versus the undefeated 9-0 Scott City Beavers, a rematch of a game played earlier this year that you and I both were at and called on the radio, where Beloit hung around for a while, but then Scott City eventually pulled away and won 55-12. So how do you see the matchup out at Scott City coming up on Friday, John?
Well, I think, a lot of times they say that the rematch is better for the loser, that for whatever reason they went back and they were able to analyze things and maybe find some holes in the opponent that they obviously didn't recognize the first time around. I really think it's admirable what Beloit has done with their squad since the injuries to Gray and Meyer and how that's impacted their offense. I really like the way that Grant executes and kind of stays within what his skill set is, although he runs the ball really well, but I was really impressed with the passer that he is, Grant Arrowsmith, at the quarterback position there. Really, I really feel like he throws a pretty nice long ball. I mean, you know, he's not, you know, I don't know if he's going to throw it, you know, 50 yards, but he has thrown some nice fades and things like that, and accurate and a pretty good looking ball. I also like what they do with their offense, where they kind of have that single wing spinner series look to it. That deception, you know, where he turns around and kind of fakes the handoff and then takes it right back up the gut. And they really kind of gashed the Scott City defense with that interior quarterback run game in that first time around. I also think that Scott City, there's some question marks, at least from the game that I saw, and I've watched a little film as well, with the execution of their wingback trap specifically. The wingback was taking a really deep route in the backfield, and I don't think that they like to bend it out like that. And so that's a small component of their overall game plan, but that's a play that they like to hit for big plays, and the execution wasn't there that well on that. Obviously, Wyatt Hayes took care of business, you know, inside the tackles and off the edge, and Parker Gooden was just one of the biggest revelations of the season for me. When you see a wing T team that runs the ball as much as Scott City does, a lot of times you don't hear anything about their quarterback. And the way that he threw the ball, where he stood up tall in the pocket and threw the long ball down the field, or whether he wanted to set down and kind of rifle in the short hitches and those kind of things. Scott City, I think we've talked about this before, they're going to have to use their passing game if they get down the road against tougher opponents. My feeling is that Beloit probably finds a way to keep it closer, plays a controlled ball game and keeps it a little closer, but they're just they're just outmatched in the overall. I mean, just in sheer numbers. You know, we look at all the kids that Scott City has on the sideline, and a bunch of juniors that came in and played quality minutes for them. I just think they're probably too much for Beloit, but I have a feeling that Beloit keeps it closer than that first contest.
So if Scott City wins, they'll be at Andale or Chapman. If Beloit wins, they would be home to either Andale or Chapman. That'd be a big matchup next round, Andale and Scott City. Let's turn now to eight-man Division II. Here are the matchups. Lost Springs Center is at St. Paul at 6 o'clock Friday. Hanover, they just keep chugging along. They'll host Frankfort, a team they beat 46-0 a few weeks ago. Waverly will be hosting Southern Coffee County. And Mankato will be Axtell at Rock Hills, which we'll have on KNDY 95.5 out of Marysville. Osborne will be hosting Sylvan Lucas, a rematch of a game earlier this year won by Osborne by point rule late in the fourth quarter. This time the game will be in Osborne, and we'll have that one on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com with pregame coverage at 6:30, kickoff at 7. South Barber, undefeated 8-0, will be hosting Stafford. Dighton at home against Northern Valley. And Hutch Central Christian is at Otis Bison. That's the eight-man Division II playoff bracket. So we want to start locally. Let's begin with Rock Hills, a team that, you know, they played Hanover, got blown out of the water earlier in the year. They've had a lot of injuries to deal with. Their quarterback, Gillett, was out for a while. Now he's back. He threw for 4 touchdowns, 249 yards last week. That adds a different component to this Rock Hills offense. But Axtell, a team that nearly defeated Hanover a few weeks back. They have a team that flat out can throw the football with the Cook kid and then boosting at quarterback. This is going to be an interesting matchup and should be a lot of points in Mankato, I would imagine, on Friday.
Well, heading into the season, I really thought that Rock Hills was the number two ranked team in this classification to Hanover. Of course, they had the injuries to Gillett and to Welchel coming off the injury, and really just got manhandled by Hanover. And kind of, I think, you know, it kind of showed us that maybe they're overall, they might just be a notch below that level right now. But I will say that Rock Hills backfield is one of the two fastest backfields that I saw last year, all classifications. Do you know who the other one was?
Hanover?
Osborne,
yeah.
Osborne, the Holloway brothers are the two fastest kids that I've seen play in person in probably the last 5 years. And I've watched 6A football, 5A football, all that kind of thing. But Rock Hills, that speed kills. I think they're going to move the ball, in my opinion, as long as everybody's healthy, as long as those three guys, Zane Colton, Gillette, and Welchel, as long as those three are healthy, I think they're going to move the ball. But the key is what they do on the back end of their defense. Cook has broke the state record for touchdown receptions, I think, in a season is what it is. And Bussing comes from a family name that has thrown the ball very successful at Axtell. So they're going to have to find a way to either pressure the quarterback up front or defend on the back end. And even if they have a healthy defensive backfield, when you look at what Axtell's done over the course of the season, I just don't see a way that they can keep them out of the end zone, you know, on a consistent kind of a basis. And it only takes a handful of plays. That's the corner on the secondary is maybe the toughest position to play on the field, because you can play 99 snaps right and play one wrong, and it shows up in the form of a 50-yard touchdown reception. And so I think they'll have to get pressure and they'll have to get some turnovers, but I think they'll score points. It's just, you know, whether or not they can slow down Axtell's offense.
I think it's a tough matchup for Rock Hills because, one, there's nobody in the state, I think, at that level that throws the ball like they do, and they can just throw it up and let Cook go get it. He's that great of an athlete. You can defend it perfectly, and he still can make the play. And Rock Hills hasn't seen anything like that this year. Nobody probably has, other than teams that have already played Axtell early in the year. I think it's a really tough matchup. If I'm Rock Hills, I'm hoping for a little bit of a, I don't know, wet weather perhaps, because maybe they can shorten the game and run the ball down the throat of Axtell. I think it's a tough matchup, but it's going to be a Mankato. Axtell's got to make the long trip. The other game, and you mentioned Osborne with their speed in the backfield, is a rematch of a game played on September 21st in Sylvan. And Sylvan hung around for a while, and Osborne eventually pulled away in the second half. They won 60-14. Game was called with 3:27 left in the fourth quarter, and they have a rematch in Osborne coming up on Friday. Osborne 8-1, they only lost to Hoxie. That was early in the year, and there was a lot of talk about Osborne's defense wasn't very good, and it wasn't early in the year. They gave up 76 to Hill City and over 50 to Hoxie, but they really have improved on the defensive side of the ball. And then offensively, you can hold them down for a quarter, quarter and a half, two and a half, but you can't hold them down for four quarters. Next thing you know, they explode for 26, 28, 32 points. They can do it so quickly. Sylvan Lucas, though, seems to have a recipe that maybe could work against Osborne. That is, they're physical, and they run the football very well. How do you see this rematch shaping out on Friday?
Well, they had the formula during the first contest. As I understand it, they drove into Osborne territory several times, and there were a number of penalties that moved them back and some, I think, some turnovers. And they took that, you know, I can't remember the final off the top of my head, like 62-14 or something like that, but they played almost all four quarters of that game.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that they're going to probably stick with it, and they're going to try to pound the ball at them, and they're going to try to eat up the clock as much as possible. But they have to finish those drives and get in the end zone. And you know, I just think, like, we'll talk about it again and again and again, Osborne's speed in their backfield is just elite. And sure, you stop them to gains of a few yards, you know, maybe a few plays in a row, a few series in a row, but eventually they're going to break out with a long touchdown run. And that's just so debilitating, you know, to a defense when they rip off a 60-yard score easily, it can just be so debilitating. But they're going to have to control the ball, and you know, I would anticipate that they go back and look at that game and they learn from it, and that they probably find a way, Sylvan Lucas does, to get into the end zone maybe a couple more times. But I'm just not sure that they can consistently keep Osborne off the scoreboard.
I think you got to score probably at least 40 to beat Osborne, unless you have an outstanding defense. And Hoxie was really physical and eventually wore down. Osborne had more numbers. So who do you like out of eight-man division two? I'm guessing, gosh, Hanover-Axtell would be an unbelievable matchup, and Rock Hills would try to ruin that. But it looks like it's more than likely Hanover or Axtell versus who? I'd take Osborne.
I agree completely. But with one caveat, they got to stay healthy. I mean,
yes.
We've talked about it all year. It's really probably imperative that both of the Holloway brothers be 100% healthy all the way through the playoffs and into the championship game. You know, losing one of those guys would be really hard on them.
I'm with you on that. Let's go to eight-man division one real quickly. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I want to get to the 1A and 2A. A couple of really intriguing matchups that if I could clone myself, I'd like to go to these. One is Victoria at St. Francis. Victoria survived a big-time scare from Leota last week. Victoria at St. Francis, St. Francis 9-0. And the other one is Hoxie at Clifton Clyde. Coach Steinbrock's done a wonderful job with Clifton Clyde. They're 9-0, and I don't think they're getting as much respect from people across the state as they should. And they'll be hosting Hoxie, who's 8-1. I mean, this Clifton Clyde team that absolutely blew out Hill City at Hill City earlier this year. They already beat Victoria. And then Hoxie comes to town. Hoxie survived, winning by 10. It was a close game against Hill City. I don't know, man. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but Clifton Clyde is a team that I certainly could see coming out of this bracket and into the championship.
So I think Clifton Clyde probably beats Hoxie, and especially, you know, if you compare scores, Hoxie struggles a little bit with Hill City. Clifton Clyde did not struggle with Hill City at all.
Yeah.
The final score of that game is not really even as bad as it was. They were in control at the half. I think St. Francis probably beats Victoria pretty soundly. But for me, the storyline for this classification is, does anybody touch Central Plains?
Yeah, that would be the next game for Clifton Clyde, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Miles Menges, 6'4", 205 quarterback, 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. They have something like 4 backs that have rushed for at least 200 yards. They have 5 receivers that have caught passes for at least 165 yards. They have made 63 tackles for loss as a team. Their leading tackler has 112 tackles. Grant Heldstad, a 6'1", 182-pound linebacker, he's got 112 tackles, and he has 16 tackles for loss himself. I think that probably this classification is Central Plains in a runaway. And even though I think Clifton Clyde will be able to move the ball on them, I just don't see a scenario where Clifton Clyde's defense can slow them down, because Clifton Clyde is very good up front. The oldie kid, and of course Drake Steinbrock, you know, is kind of a combo backer safety type player that he moves all over the field, does a lot of different things. But Central Plains is so multiple. They can run the ball, they can throw the ball, and they're very good on defense as well. I just don't see that a team can, you know, I think a Central Plains Clifton Clyde matchup looks something like 38 to 8, you know, 8 or 12 or 16 or something like that. That would be my guess.
You know, it's interesting you bring up that Central Plains can hurt you with the run in the pass. I think back to when Osborne and Clifton Clyde met in the sub-state finals. They had played earlier in the year, and Clifton Clyde got beat pretty soundly. And then Clifton Clyde had an opportunity to win the ball game late against Osborne in the rematch at Clifton Clyde. And Osborne, that team was being described just like you're saying, a Central Plains. Maybe not quite as good defensively, but they could, with Jake Tarrant quarterback, they could throw out multiple sets, multiple looks. They had speed, they had power with LaRocque in the backfield and the speed in the backfield. They could throw at the Brant Walters. They could do everything you wanted to do offensively. And Clifton Clyde, and that was a rematch, whereas in this case, they won't have a rematch against Central Plains. So I'm just saying, don't sleep on Clifton Clyde. I'm not going to say I'm going to pick them to beat Central Plains, because you're right. I just saw them at that part of the bracket, and I was like, oh, yeah, there is Central Plains there. But it does look to me that probably the best teams are actually on that half of the bracket. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree completely. Yeah, and I will say Clifton Clyde is very physical. Yeah. And they also one thing that I've grown to believe over, you know, 30 years of coaching, covering, playing high school football in Kansas, is that the team that gets the most defenders to the ball on defense on a consistent basis is the team that will win championships. And Clifton Clyde, they get 6 hats to the ball on every play. So I don't want to write them off at all. I just think Central Plains is just so talented. I mean, if you look at them, the players that they have would play on any classification in the state of Kansas. Their quarterback, and that's probably key. I mean, Mingus, you know, who's a transfer from Ellenwood after his sophomore season, he can't get hurt. I mean, although Devin Ryan was the starter, you know, before Mingus transferred, and he's playing out in the slot. And when he was a sophomore, he threw for 32 touchdowns with 6 interceptions. I mean, so even if he does get hurt, they've got a quarterback out at the slot receiver position that's been more successful throwing touchdowns in a single season than the one that they have right now. So they just have a lot of weapons. But Clifton Clyde's a very physical, very tough team.
John Betts of Kansas Pregame, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. We're previewing the high school playoffs coming up on Friday. We move to Class 1A, where to me it's going to be Smith Center and Centralia in the championship, although Smith Center very fortunate to beat El Saline a couple weeks ago, which surprised all of us here. We thought Smith Center would roll in that game. Smith Center will take on Sacred Heart coming up on Friday at 6:00. They beat Sacred Heart 55-0 early in the year. If they win that game, which we expect them to do, then they'll play more than likely Sedgwick in the next round. In the bottom half of that bracket, Plainville is hosting El Saline. Those are the two teams that I think would probably give Smith Center the toughest time in that part of the bracket. And then there is Elkhart, undefeated. They are hosting Inman. So how do you see Smith Center in their run in the out west on that side of the bracket?
Well, I don't think very many people entering the season thought that this was potentially the deepest classification in the state of Kansas. No. Because really right now when you look at it, it might be. I mean, yeah, Smith Center, I thought Smith Center would be El Saline, but I thought it would be much closer than last year. You know, I thought maybe a 2-touchdown, 3-touchdown game, but El Saline really physically matched Smith Center in that contest. They played hard and really missed an opportunity to win late in the game and stopped Smith Center on fourth down deep in their own territory, and then had to give the ball back and still gave Smith Center a chance to score again. You know, I think Plainville and El Saline have the potential to have a good game. Everybody's kind of forgetting about Elkhart because mm-hmm. they're essentially in Oklahoma.
Yes.
and Lane Wisnan at the quarterback position for them, you know, last year he rushed for 2,000 and threw for 1,800, I think it was, or something like that, and he's on that pace again. And then when you look at the top side of the bracket, Centralia is very good. Their only two losses are to Mid-East League powers, Rossville and Riley County, to open the season, I think. I think Olpe, you know, is a team that can be competitive. Jackson Heights has a great offensive line. You know, St. Mary's Colgan had a mid-season loss to Abilene that I was a little surprised about, because even though Abilene is a 3A, 4A squad, over the years they are not the Abilene of the past. I think this is a really deep classification. And Smith Center, I know, you know, I talked to their coaches from time to time, and I know they felt not great about the way that they played El Saline. And then they come back and probably personally, in my opinion, didn't beat Oakley maybe as soundly as I thought they would have, coming off of a loss where they felt like they tried to correct some things. So, you know, I think it's probably a flip of a coin in terms of whether or not Smith Center puts it all together and makes a run and just blows everybody out, or whether there's a bunch of close contests down the stretch here. And right now, it really looks like this is a very deep classification.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be Smith Center and Centralia, but I think Smith Center might be a little bit shakier pick than Centralia, and I wouldn't have told you that probably a few weeks ago. In Class 2A, Phillipsburg undefeated. Some are saying Phillipsburg Silver Lake in the championship, and Phillipsburg is 9-0. They'll host Lakin. Conway Springs 9-0 host Chaparral. Phillipsburg, Conway Springs both win. They meet in the next round. That'd be a heck of a game. Former Beloit head coach Greg Koning, head coach at Cimarron, they're hosting Hoisington. Cimarron 8-1. Hutch Trinity Catholic is hosting Garden Plain. Southeast Saline with a win over Nemaw Central, they'll be at Riley County, a team they beat by two earlier this year. And then Silver Lake should have an easy time. They'll be hosting McClouth. Rossville is at Mar Hill Mount Academy, and Osage City is at Humboldt. So, really, I guess you can pick what you want to do there. I guess Phillipsburg would be of interest to this area, and then probably Cimarron, just the connection with the former Beloit coach, Greg Koning.
Well, I think Phillipsburg is the head and shoulders favorite in this classification. I mean, you look at the way that they dominated Hoisington a couple weeks ago. That was just a really, really sound beating of a Hoisington team that I thought would give Phillipsburg fits a little bit. You know, I think Cimarron, a squad that lost a couple of very talented players from last year in Jalen Pickle and the older Seabolt brother that I think was a Shrine Bowler, and actually I think it's starting at linebacker for Bethel this year. They have replaced those guys and have really put together a nice season, and I think that, you know, last year they weren't really competitive. This was the same game last year against Hoisington, and they weren't really competitive in that. Hoisington was they ran the ball, they were more physical on a more consistent basis. I think this is probably a much closer game, but right now, you know, you're looking at potentially Phillipsburg and Conway Springs, but even Conway Springs, they are huge up front, but when you watch film of them, they don't look like they have great speed out of the backfield, and they're just so one-dimensional with their offense. You know, the single wing, and people have literally years of film to watch to kind of diagnose what's going on. But Phillipsburg just has athletes. I mean, everywhere. I mean, they've got you know, three running backs that can carry the ball. They've got Trey Sides, the four-year starter at quarterback. They've got linebackers. You know, the back end of their defense is really good, and they're not huge up front the way that they have been in the past, but they all run to the ball. And so, you know, right now it looks like Phillipsburg just can't be slowed down. That Southeast Saline-Riley County matchup is really interesting, because Riley County, in the game they played earlier in the year, which is just, I think, two or three weeks ago now, Riley County actually led that 21-0 at the half, I think. And Southeast Saline came back to win 23-21, and it was a really great win for them, because they had just gotten beaten by Rossville, a Mid-East League opponent, like 32-6. And Southeast Saline has struggled once they've got out of North Central Activities Association play in the playoffs over the years, you know, losing to the Garden Plains of the world and I can't remember whether they played a Conway Springs or team or not, but generally the playoffs have not been nice to them. So they figured something out in the second half of that game and scored 23 unanswered points, I believe is how it came off. And hopefully that's got them they've got a solution, and now they have an opportunity to potentially make a run. But you, I mean, the money is on Silver Lake coming out of there because, you know, for the 44 years that C.J. Hamilton has been head coach, you could make a pretty solid bet by just putting money down at the beginning of the season that Silver Lake was going to wind up in the state championship game. So they're certainly the favorite coming out of that side of the bracket.
Yeah, I would agree with you. John Betts of Kansas Pregame is with us. All right, John, time for an off-the-wall question. What is your favorite trick-or-treat candy?
Oh, man. How do you narrow it down to just one?
It is hard, isn't it?
Man, I don't know. I'm a big caramel guy.
Okay.
So I like Twix. You know, Rolos is not a candy that you get a lot in your trick or treat sack, but I love me some Rolos.
Me too.
I love caramel, but caramel in candy bars, not just. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of just, you know, caramels that you pop out of the cellophane wrapper and eat that way.
Right.
But caramel. Any kind of candy bar that has caramel in it, generally I'm going to be pretty excited about.
The code word here is caramel. I think you like caramel is what you're trying to tell me.
Or caramel, however you prefer.
I know, I was going to say, I've heard it pronounced both ways, and I don't even know what's the correct way. Either way is good with me.
I think caramel is the Midwest, kind of the redneck way to say it. Well, I think caramel is the back east. The Northern Elite, that's the way they say.
No matter how you pronounce it, it's good, okay? It's really, really good. All right, and finally, when can we expect to see the Kansas Pregame Wrestling Basketball Magazine out there? No pressure at all, John, no pressure at all.
I just hope in 2018. No, in all honesty, and because this is the first year that I'm doing something of kind of this scope, and what I like to say is that for the areas that we have covered over the years, it will be intensely comprehensive, so the western half of the state, essentially. And for the parts where we haven't had as much presence, it will be a little bit more loose coverage, but it will be statewide. My goal is to get it out by November 29th, prior to the, you know, most of those basketball openers.
Right.
But there is a possibility that it could slip into the first week of December. So,
well, it's a lot of work. We appreciate all the work that you put in to support and promote high school sports across the state of Kansas, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, and we'll see who's still left standing when it comes to high school football playoff brackets.
Well, I really appreciate the time. I appreciate all the work that you guys do, and I appreciate all the, you know, sometimes we get in the media industry, if you will, and I'm throwing up air quotes that people can't see. But sometimes we get competitive. We get, we talk about markets that we want to control. But I just really appreciate all the work. You know, K Preps, what they do, what you guys do with NCKS Sports, and you know, media seems to be becoming almost a little bit more of a collaboration between all of us. And probably because, you know, newsrooms have cut back resources, and there's just probably less of us doing it overall. And I feel like sometimes we collaborate a little bit more than compete, you know, the way that maybe we used to. And certainly there's still competition out there, but I just appreciate you giving me a platform. I appreciate you, the work that you do, and I know how much you guys hustle so that you can tell the stories of these kids and coaches and give something that their parents can be proud of.
Well, we appreciate that, John. Always enjoy having you on the show. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy Halloween, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take care. It's John Betts of Kansas Pregame, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.